Transformation is inevitable, but it doesn't have to take forever. What if you could see the obstacles before they happen, sidestep the common mistakes, and drive change faster than ever? That's exactly what we're here to do. Welcome to Transformation Unfiltered, the podcast where HR professionals share their stories about how they've hit fast forward on their transformation efforts and built legacies as world-class people leaders and change makers. And now, here's the show.
So I tried multiple times to sit with the owner and say, hey, let's clear the air. Let's make sure we understand what you need. If you aren't getting what you needed out of my leadership, let me know. If that is the direction you want to go, we can resolve this now. And I got nothing. I got no meetings. I got nothing set up. I got any touch points that I had set up with him blown off. So it was really just a figure out on your own. And again, they had me working on an hourly contract, so it wasn't like I had these big, hairy, audacious goals to resolve. It was really the actual day-to-day of making sure that the wheels weren't falling off the bus. It was absolutely confusing. It was, as you said, a 180-degree shift from where things were. I was brought in to help stabilize the department. I was brought in originally for a smaller project. The person who was running HR left, leaving just a generalist who was getting ready to go out on maternity leave. And so I was there really as the only conduit to HR, to the only person who understood, frankly, anything about the industry we were in. And slowly built the team behind me. But when they brought in his sister, who he said he'd been trying to bring in for years, and she finally agreed to do this, and it was my job to make sure she understood everything that she needed to know about HR in this specific industry. And she wouldn't listen to me. And having it get to a head where she finally asked, who's in charge of this department? And I said, I guess you are. And her response to me was, that's right. So we're going to do it my way. And I said, great, but you're doing things illegal. You're doing things that are going to cause these issues for the company. And that's not something that I can sit here and do. So that was really that make it or break a decision that was critical.
Real leadership happens when you rock the boat. Let me say that again. Real leadership happens when you rock the boat. And today's story is going to be about how rocking the boat and learning when to walk away is oftentimes the best decision that you can make as a leader. What happens when you're in a role and you're brought in to change the direction of the organization? And you're brought in to put in policies and procedures to help an organization get to the next level. That's a big role. And just when you get momentum, you find out that the ground underneath you has begun to shift. New leadership is brought in and you're starting to feel yourself get iced out and excluded from important things that you need to be involved with. And your spidey sense is going off. And when you bring it up, it gets brushed off as no big deal. Then you notice something that is a critical oversight and you bring it up to the attention of the people that need to pay attention. And they tell you that's not something for you to concern yourself with. You double and triple down and try to make the case that, hey, this is a real risk for the organization. And they tell you to stay in your lane. Do you stick around? Do you continue to raise a fuss? Or do you wash your hands of the whole thing? Today's story will tell you how sometimes walking away is the best leadership decision that you can make because it's one that's made on principle. Today, we have Ben Madden, a highly experienced HR executive with nearly 20 years of experience guiding strategic HR decisions for fast-growing companies. He's an SVP of Human Resources at the Ambit Group, a large government contracting systems integrator, and he played a key role in substantially growing the workforce, integrating two acquisitions, and facilitating the company's successful sale in 2022. Under his leadership, Ambit twice earned the Best Places to Work recognition from the Washington Post. His expertise spans talent acquisition, employee engagement, benefits, and full employee lifecycle management. He's an active leader in the HR community, and he serves on the board of NovaSherm, including two terms as president and Disrupt HR Washington, D.C. Ben, welcome to the show.
Thanks. Pleasure to be here.
In typical Transformation Unfiltered format, we're going to tear the Band-Aid off. Take us back to that time where you were in your career and you thought that, oh, this thing that I just did is probably going to get me fired. So tell us about that.
Absolutely. Going back to early in my consulting career, which is hard to believe, I've been in HR for 20 plus years. But early in my consulting career, I was with a client and things just weren't sitting right. There were changes being brought in. The client brought his sister in to the same role that I was working in. So things were starting to feel a little bit off. The person who I was now reporting to didn't understand HR, didn't understand the world in which we were working. And so very quickly it became apparent that there was going to be conflict between the way she was trying to run something, which was much more with an iron fist and not really caring about what things were right and wrong, and how I have always approached my work, which is, let's be compliant, but let's also understand how we can work with staff to make things right. And very quickly, within the first 2 weeks, we would have headbutting matches. We would have shouting matches over what was the right way to approach something. And it very quickly came to a head. I actually, instead of getting fired, I quit because I realized that was the time that I needed to really drive for what is important to me. And
that's what we call the Cliff Notes version of the story. So we'll definitely dig into the details and get more in the weeds with it. But one thing that I'm curious about, this happened when you were early in your consulting career?
This happened early in my professional running a business career. Oh. It was only about 2.5 years ago. So it's eye-opening. And even now, we learn a whole lot every day when it comes to the work that all of us do.
Okay. So this was early in your career as an entrepreneur. So that's interesting. So you're in startup mode. And rule number one of startup is to make sure you're generating revenue. And you're in a spot where you have somebody that's paying you to do some stuff. It can be tough to walk away from that money and say, yeah, this is not for me. So how did you navigate that sort of set of circumstances in your headspace? Because here you are just starting out and now you're in the middle of something that's not good, but I'm assuming the money was great. It's going to be tough to walk away from. So tell us about all of this stuff that was going through your head at that time.
I actually just signed an extension on this agreement with them. We had started off small, had grown, doing some more of that work that I was doing with them. And when he brought in his sister, I was going to give it a chance. I figured, let's see how this goes. Let's see what we can do to hopefully get the right people in the right places. But when it became very apparent that their desires for my way or the highway was the only way that they were going to process doing HR, I knew, based on my values and my beliefs of how HR needs to go, I knew I had to just take that leap and jump away from this situation. I figured I would make it back through other clients that I could pick up. I figured I would make it up through, frankly, working with clients that maybe wanted to believe the work that I did. And at the same time, I figured it's early on. If I need to take a pause or if I need to pivot back to going into full-time work, I can do that without too much loss, but I cannot stress enough that I couldn't give up my values and my belief system.
When you're looking at that situation roughly 2.5-3 years ago, you know, you still, this isn't your first rodeo as far as being in HR and being able to advise companies. So you have a little bit of safety built in where you're like, hey, I can rely on my network and I have other options. But one thing that I'm wondering is this whole process of bringing the CEO's sister or the owner's sister in there, that seems a little abrupt. Seems like it's out of left field. What was the reasoning for that happening in the first place?
So I was told, and actually I wasn't even told directly. I got this through the rest of the HR staff that was there, that the owner had brought in a new representative to help run HR. So I reached out immediately and said, hey, I understand you brought somebody in. I want to make sure we don't have too many cooks in the kitchen. I want to make sure that we are all going in the same direction of how and what we want HR to be. And for 2 weeks, it was get her up to speed and let her understand what needs to be done. But it became very apparent that coming from a different industry, a different set of working understandings and principles of HR was not something that was going to actually be productive. I tried my hardest to say, yeah, this is going to work. Let's do it. I worked with the team that I helped bring in to truly get on board and drive. But very quickly, as we were trying to finish up projects before she started, and things were going off the rails. There were concerns about why do I need to be in compliance with things like I-9s? Why do I need to be doing X, Y, and Z things? And that's really the stuff that started to give me those red flags about, is this the right type of environment for me, both in my experience in HR, and frankly, for an organization that claims it values people?
So it's interesting that you mentioned that things were going off the rails, even on what I would think is pretty basic stuff like compliance on I-9s. That's like a core element of HR functions. Don't get the company sued and don't get the company in an investigation. What's your line of sight into why these shortcuts were being risked as an appropriate way forward? That seems weird.
The line that I was given multiple times was, I have lawyers to get me out of those situations, which is never actually something you want to hear. You don't ever want to pay a lawyer to get you out of a situation that you could resolve for ostensibly free. And why bother being in compliance when I could just pay somebody to get me out of it and move on?
So this is an interesting contrast. You, as a startup entrepreneur, you're taking the approach of slow down to speed up. I want to make sure that our I's are dotted, T's are crossed so that we can operate at a fairly high velocity going forward because we have all of our ducks in a row. And then you have the organization that you're working for that is pretty much at the opposite end. Let's run fast and break things and hope so nobody catches us. That's 180 degrees worth of difference in terms of operating philosophy. Did that surprise you, that immediate pivot happened? Because it doesn't see, you got extended, so people were used to working with you a certain way, and now this is this completely opposite direction. How did that strike you?
It was absolutely confusing. It was, as you said, a 180-degree shift from where things were. I was brought in to help stabilize the department. I was brought in originally for a smaller project. The person who was running HR left, leaving just a generalist who was getting ready to go out on maternity leave. And so I was there really as the only conduit to HR, to the only person who understood, frankly, anything about the industry we were in. And slowly built the team behind me. But when they brought in his sister, who he said he'd been trying to bring in for years, and she finally agreed to do this, and it was my job to make sure she understood everything that she needed to know about HR in this specific industry. And she wouldn't listen to me. And having it get to a head where she finally asked, who's in charge of this department? And I said, well, I guess you are. And her response to me was, that's right. So we're going to do it my way. And I said, great, but you're doing things illegal. You're doing things that are going to cause these issues for the company. And that's not something that I can sit here and do. So that was really that make it or break it decision that was critical.
That's tough. And I keep thinking through the circumstances that you're in because you're in a build phase before you got the extension. So you brought people into this too. And now you're dealing with this person that wants to operate a different way. And you're the conduit between that person and the rest of the team. What was the team sensing and feeling as this churn was happening?
So the team absolutely was really concerned. They were concerned about their jobs. They were concerned about how to operate with two different sort of viewpoints of two chefs running the kitchen, basically, and how best to maneuver with an owner who, you know, now trusts his sister more so than the person he had brought in originally. So it was a lot of me just trying to alleviate concerns immediately, trying to say, here, we got to give them a chance to build what we have already started to build. Even then, things went even further. The HR director I had brought in was fired for one mistake, given no notice. And again, leaving a team that was very green when it came to handling a lot of the HR issues. And then two leaders who did not see eye to eye and were really having a values misalignment to drive forward.
When you were describing the HR director who got fired for making one mistake, I was chuckling in my head because I just read an article about a law firm that had summer interns. And there was one particular intern who spent 2 months biting people in the law firm. And it took HR over 2 months to get rid of them because they couldn't figure. And this was multiple instances of biting. And what you're describing is the opposite end of the spectrum where it's no warning and you're terminated. That creates a whole nother set of issues because you just mentioned that you have a junior team underneath and they see their boss get rolled. They've got to be completely freaking out. So you have fires all over the place, a risk of some pretty high churn. How did you filter that up upstream so that people are aware, hey, this is not how things are supposed to work.
Phil, a lot of times I would have long conversations with the HR team. We would go have coffees. We would go just talk through their experiences. I would try and make sure that they all didn't feel like they were on this crazy train of how did we get here and how did things go so badly so quickly? And at the same time, it was a lot of just trying to show that calm. It's the age-old sort of view of a duck swimming in the water. Everything looks calm in front, on top, and then on the bottom, you're swimming really hard at just trying to stay in place. That's really what it felt like for a lot of that was, I need to show the calm to keep the team together without having that team fracture, while at the same time working really hard to try and make these changes that I knew needed to be done.
Are you enjoying the conversation? There are more game-changing insights still ahead. If you're passionate about driving transformation, and want to stay ahead of the curve? Join our Accelerated Transformation community. Send us a quick message on LinkedIn or via email and we'll send you an invite. Now, let's get back to the show. One thing that I keep thinking about is when you have a new cook in the kitchen and you're the incumbent who's been there for a while, probably the first thing that I would do in that sort of scenario is probably have a rescoping session or a level setting session. I'm assuming you tried that. How did that go over when you're trying to reset the table?
Phil, I tried multiple times to sit with the owner and say, hey, let's clear the air. Let's make sure we understand what you need. If you aren't getting what you needed out of my leadership, let me know. If that is the direction you want to go, we can resolve this now. And I got nothing. I got no meetings. I got nothing set up. I got any touch points that I had set up with him blown off. So it was really just a figure it out on your own. And again, they had me working on an hourly contract. So it wasn't like I had these big, hairy, audacious goals to resolve. It was really the actual day-to-day of making sure that the wheels weren't falling off the bus.
So what you're describing, whenever I have these conversations with other team members or other people that are in my circle, one of the red flags that you might be on the way out is if you have your one-on-one start getting canceled, if you get left out of important meetings. So you're describing all of these things that are red flags that, hey, you're not going to be in the room where things happen anymore. So I see that happening in your circumstances. So when you see that happening, how do you strategize or how did you strategize what your exit plan was while still making sure that the existing team that you brought on isn't in full freakout mode?
It was really just driving forward to make sure the day-to-day was still getting done. We needed to make sure that people were still being hired, that all of the benefit enrollment things, all of the data that we needed to provide was still being there. I, at the same time, in the back of my mind, saw those red flags, but didn't assume that they were going to get to the point where it needed to be an immediate, I'm out of here. Thought things were going well. I got that contract extension. I figured, great, we'll survive this. And then it just truly got to a point where it didn't make sense. It didn't have that connection that, you know, you want to have with clients. You want to feel connected to the work that they're doing to be able to be supportive of the work that they're doing and drive forward.
So you tore the Band-Aid off and you ended up leaving. You made the decision that, hey, I'm not going to put myself at risk and put myself in a scenario where I'm operating against my values and my philosophy. So there's probably a lot more that we can dig into in terms of the dynamics that you were facing, but I think we get a good feeling of 180 degree turn with no sort of discussion about what are we driving at from an overall goals perspective. Let's just run fast and break things and hopefully we don't get sued. I don't think I'd want to work there. But looking back at that situation, now that you have some distance behind it, what were the major things that you learned out of going through that experience?
Phil, absolutely. First and foremost is understand your values, understand what it is that makes it so you want to get up in the morning every day and do the work that you do, whether it's HR, whether it's anything else. Because if your values and your beliefs about what it is that you do are attacked, that's going to make it so you can't be an effective leader. You can't be effective in the work that you're doing. So that was absolute number one. Number two is, so for me, immediately afterwards, it was contacting folks that were critical for me to be successful on that contract. One of the HR generalists who was not in the office that day, the insurance broker that I had helped bring in, just to A, let them know that this is where things got to a point. And also pretty much just to be able to hear that you made the right choice. Nobody wants to walk away from money. Nobody wants to walk away from a guaranteed contract. But I had to do what I needed to do in order to feel that I could wake up in the morning and do the work that I needed to do.
So when I think about this, I'm in sort of two minds. On the one hand, I think, hey, it's probably a little bit easier to pull this off if you're a consultant. But on the other hand, if you're an early stage startup founder and you're doing this, that's a pretty tough decision. I want you to think about this scenario, but apply it to, let's say, an earlier career employee who's leading it, dealing with the same stuff. So how would you advise them to manage that situation?
I have had to deal with employees that felt like they were not in the right place. Their things had shifted a whole lot. So for me, I've always talked to folks about you need to follow your values and make sure that they're aligned with both the culture that you're in, the culture that your organization espouses that they believe in, and your values. If there's a mismatch, it's time to start looking for new ways to go about working. I was fortunate that I didn't have to do things like give a 2-week notice period. I can literally say that I was done, and as long as I gave it in writing, my contract was up. For employees that are going through that, it's really understanding where it is and how long of a runway they need to build in order to be able to get that new opportunity.
We've spent a fair amount of time talking about aligning with values, but I think that creates an interesting opportunity as a full-time employee within an organization where if you're feeling uncomfortable, theoretically, if you're at a level of maturity, you can basically say, hey, I'm not going to do this because this is misaligned with the company values and it's misaligned with my values. How would you have that conversation in a way that it doesn't end up blowing yourself up in the process?
It's really being self-aware to understand when there is that misalignment. There are a lot of employees who go to work every day and are blissfully unaware that sort of the work that the company is doing doesn't align with what they want to do. But really being able to understand that what it is if this company values doesn't match me, that's the first critical step, is that self-awareness. Beyond that, it's really being able to have folks in the organization that you know and trust that you can have these types of conversations with. When I was internal, I was fortunate to have a leader who respected me and would hear what I had to say. And so when there were things that didn't make sense for us as a company and for me as a leader, I was able to have those discussions and we were able to see change. Here, when I was consulting, I didn't have that same level and comfort, so I couldn't even bring the issues to the table to try and resolve them.
Oh, that's interesting. So as a consultant, there was no mechanism for you to bring that to the table. Is that something that you've applied in later roles where you do have more of a stakeholder say, even though you're not an FTE within the organization?
Absolutely. Playing the role of a subject matter expert now, gig in my entrepreneurial and journey, I am much more comfortable now saying, hey, there are things here that don't make sense. You guys espouse X, Y, and Z, but really you're doing A, B, and C. We need to look at what is critical for you as an organization. I've walked away from potential clients based on things that don't match my values now. So I also have gotten clear on what I need to drive that.
You went through this experience pretty early. How has that impacted how you select your clients or how you decide to partner with clients going forward?
So for me, it is truly making sure I know what I'm getting into. This organization, I didn't do what I always suggest employees do, which is read the reviews that company that employees leave on things like Glassdoor and other places. Those red flags are there for a reason. I've also walked away from organizations that don't have that do things that I don't necessarily agree with. There was a gun manufacturing company that was looking for HR support. And for me, that was not something that I felt comfortable being supportive of. So I did what was critical for me, which was I can't do this work because of my own personal beliefs. But here's another group of folks who would be happy to support that. And you're able to square that round peg of I can't do this work, but I'm also not going to leave you all in a lurch.
I like that extra step of building a referral network that if there's companies or products that don't line up with your values, you can always refer them to somebody else that might be better aligned. I think that's good practice. When you think about that experience that you went through, what are some of the ways that it actually improved your ability to find the right clients and partner with the right organizations? Like how did this help you hit fast forward in your consulting career?
So a lot of it really helped me understand which sort of questions I need to ask. Very early on, it was great. Somebody wants to work with me. Whatever they want me to do, I'm happy to do. But now truly getting an idea of how they view the world of human capital, how they view the criticality of it, are questions that I ask up front. So even in those sessions where I'm just doing discovery, I want to know what I'm getting into. And if I don't know that, either I need to continue asking those questions, or it's a client that doesn't understand what they want. And so either it is helping them define what it is to have human capital, or it's a client that I'm not going to work with.
That makes sense. But let me run you through a scenario. You can have all the best discovery in the world. You can check your reviews and all that sort of stuff. And then you get into an environment and you're plugging along just fine after a period of time. And then something pops up where you've given your point of view and there's a disagreement between the person that signs the check. And it's cliche, but he who has the gold makes the rules. What if they say, "That's great, Ben. I want you to take this direction. That's what I'm paying you for." How would you? They probably wouldn't say that. Maybe they would. I don't know. But if that situation comes up, how would you deal with that scenario?
So I've dealt tangentially around that. And a lot of it is document the risk that I'm seeing. If you're asking me to do something that is wrong, illegal, et cetera, document the risk. I have notified you that this is something that we cannot do, something that has to be done in order to be in compliance. I notified you on X date. You've asked to either not do it, brush it aside, all of those things. And then from there, allow the company to have that risk on them. I've done everything that I can in my powers to say, this is what we need to do. And if you decide not to take that advice, I am just a paid consultant, but this is how we're going to put a block on going forward with whatever activity that is.
I like your process advice on documentation because you don't want the blowback to come back on you and you make the company assume the risk. So that's good advice just in general. I want to change the dynamics a little bit. Let's say it's a similar scenario, but you're an FTE. And as an FTE, you're probably a frontline leader and you have deliverables and all this sort of stuff that there's a lot of pressure to deliver. And somebody in that same circumstance is leveraging their relationship and say, "Hey, Ben, come on, be a team player. Let's make this happen." How would you advise that FTE beyond documentation to protect themselves and navigate this sort of scenario? Because it's something that happens because frontline managers are on a need-to-know basis and there's stuff above them that is probably hidden from their view. So how do you build a protection engine there?
That's where a good HR department comes in. I know that is also sort of cliche, which is go talk to your HR department about I'm getting pressure to do something. But really having a support system within an organization is critical. Beyond just documenting, beyond just talking to HR, understand what it is and the risks that are involved in all of that. Nobody wants to be held accountable for things that they can't deliver on because it's wrong, et cetera. But the more that you're able to elevate that these are the concerns that I'm seeing, these are the reasons and the rationale as to why I am unable to do something, the better off you are to protect yourself and also raise that to the company, presuming it's something that they deeply want to make sure it gets either done or not done, again, depending on the side of that fence.
One of the big things that we're talking through is how do you navigate situations where there's a misalignment between your values and what the company or the direction that the company chooses at any given moment. So when you look at that sort of circumstance where there's a misalignment between you and your leadership or your company, and you're trying to navigate that scenario as either a consultant or a full-time employee, what are the key things that you would advise people in those circumstances to do so that they're building safety around themselves and not creating exposure for themselves as they navigate those situations?
So absolutely it is critical for somebody to know their own values. A lot of times people don't know what they are until they're pushed beyond that. Like, certainly understanding what it is that is important to you as an individual, for you as somebody in an organization. And making sure that first and foremost, the organization's mission still aligns with your beliefs. If they don't, that's step one of, I need to get out of here. If building that safe net behind you is having folks that are your own personal board of advisors. There's an author named Pete Schramm who has written about this idea of having folks that can be your personal guidance when it comes to making decisions. And so the more that you can have your own personal board of advisors to give you advice about what to do, when there are these critical choices to make, is massive. And it should be outside of the organization. It should be people that you know and trust but who are also not going to give you the answer that you expect them to give you.
If people want to continue the conversation, what's the best way for them to get in touch with you?
Best way, I'm on LinkedIn. Email ben@hractionllc.com. The website, hractionllc.com, and just happy to talk.
We'll make sure to include all of that in the show notes. So I appreciate you hanging out with us, Ben, and sharing with us your thoughts and how you navigate these situations. When I think through this conversation, there's something that I was told very early in my career in terms of how you make decisions and what that decision matrix should look like. And this entire conversation reminded me of that. And there were four basic pillars that we needed to consider when you're making decisions. And I think this can broadly apply to anybody. I think one of the things that everybody needs to have the mindset around is that you're the CEO of your own career. So ultimately, whatever decision you make, the outcomes from that decision, the buck stops with you. So when you're starting to make those decisions, you need to satisfy these four criteria to make sure that you're making the best possible decision. One, is this decision that you're making good for you as an individual and good for you from a career perspective? The second piece is you have to be able to answer, is this good for the company? Third piece, is this good for the customer? And the fourth piece, and this is the trickiest one, is it ethical? Because depending on where you work, that definition of ethics can vary. So what I gathered from your conversation is that when you're checking off the answers to those questions, you need to make sure that you're staying consistent with your values and your interest in terms of advancing and progressing your career in a way that you can sleep well at night. And that's what I took away from the conversation, is that when in doubt, realign with values. It's always good to push back and say, hey, we are misaligned with my values. We're misaligned with our values, and we need to pick a different course of action. And if that doesn't work, you can still move forward in the decision-making process. Just make sure you're documenting and making sure that you are articulating why you're recommending one particular course of action. And if the leadership or the company decides to go a different direction, that's on them. So I think this is an important lesson in terms of managing ambiguity, managing conflict, managing misalignment of values. And I appreciate you sharing that with me. It reminded me of something that I came across very early in my career, and it's been an operating principle going forward. So I appreciate you hanging out and sharing that with us. For those of you who've been listening to this conversation, we appreciate you hanging out and checking it out. If you liked it, make sure you leave us a review on your favorite podcast player. Tune in next time, where we'll also have another leader hanging out with us and sharing with us those moments where they thought that they would get fired, but those lessons learned from those experiences actually helped them move to the next level. Thank you for hanging out with us and listening to Transformation Unfiltered. If you found today's conversation valuable, leave us a 5-star review on your favorite podcast player. It helps us reach more changemakers just like you. Do you know someone who would be great as a guest on our show? Send us a message on LinkedIn or drop us an email. We'd love to hear your recommendation and appreciate the connection. See you next week for another episode featuring an HR leader just like you, who's hitting fast forward on change, impact, and transformation.